The problem, Dugin writes, is that at the end of the 20th century, there occurred a fundamental crisis of expectations connected with leftist movements, leftist ideas, leftist philosophy, and leftist politics, owing to the collapse of the Soviet Union and the influence and prestige of European Marxism. Dugin identifies three varieties of leftist ideology: the old left, left nationalists, and the new left, or postmodern left. After the old left and left nationalism, Dugin discusses the new left, postmodernism, the postmodern left. The postmodern left is for him the avant-garde of leftism today, and if any group can be said to have a leftist project or to represent the leftist project, it's this group, according to Dugin. Postmodernism is, for Dugin, the most thought-out and intellectually elaborated alternative on the left. New left postmodern theorists supplemented their understanding of Marx with other theoretical and philosophical sources, eventually diluting, but also modernizing Marxism. They drew not only on Marx, but also on Freud, Nietzsche, and Heidegger. They accepted Marx's view of ideology as false consciousness and used it to interpret society, philosophy, man, and the economy. They took the will to power from Nietzsche, Freud's studies of sexuality and the unconscious, and Heidegger's analysis of human existence, and combined them into the notion of structure. Then they analyzed bourgeois society as the result of the violence and oppression of superstructures like elite rule, the market economy, science, and so on. All of these things are for them the violence of the superstructure. That's on page 132. So really enriching just the economic analysis with the psychoanalytic, the existential, and so on. In that way, the new leftists mount a systematic critical attack on capitalist society, not just from the economic side, but from all sides, political, cultural, philosophical, and artistic, including attacks on the very notions of man, reason, science, and reality. In the course of this massive intellectual work, which was ignored by orthodox Marxists and social democrats, the new leftists, Dugin writes, came to the conclusion that capitalism is not only a socio-political evil, but the fundamental expression of a global lie concerning man, reality, reason, and society. A lie that concentrates in itself a whole history of alienation. This postmodern approach interprets our society as a superstructure built on the basis of a structure that it alienates us from, and that should be liberated through deconstruction and the unmasking of mechanisms of repression. That's from page 133. To repeat this crucial point, the new left sees the normative notions of reason, science, reality, and society as the product of alienation. The old left, by contrast, and the other varieties of leftism, by contrast, do not doubt the structures of reason. Postmodern left does, they don't. And Dugin says this actually gives the postmodern left deeper insight into post-industrial society and into the philosophical, theoretical, and ideological dimensions of the problem of today. Page 134 outlines some of the characteristics of the postmodern approach: the rejection of reason, as I've already said, the renunciation of man as the measure of all things, the overcoming of all sexual taboos, the legalization of all narcotics, a move to new forms of spontaneous and sporadic being, and the destruction of structural society and government in the service of new, free, and anarchical communities. Among postmodern leftists, you might also begin to hear about the shift from humanity to post-humanity, mutants, cyborgs, clones, and virtuality, and the free selection of gender, appearance, and individual rationality, Dugin says. So you have even this radical version that wants to liberate us from gender identity and really from all kinds of identity. And now I think that's something you're all familiar with by now, more and more each day. And I just want to point out to you that for Dugin, the logic of the shift towards post-humanity is quite clear. If modernity tried to liberate us from external forms of collective identity, post-modernity continues that by trying to liberate us from gender identity, which is collective, and from human identity, which is also collective. So liberation from collective identities in and of itself tends toward post-humanism. You can no longer identify as human because that too is a collective identity. We should read a bit now from page 135. The key point is that the new leftist project is discovering forms of political realization but you should also pay attention to which forms he mentions and to how he characterizes them. Many concrete actions, he writes, gay parades, anti-globalization protests, Occupy Wall Street, the disturbances in immigrant suburbs of European cities, the defense of squatters' rights, the broad social protests of new labor unions, all reminding one of a carnival, the movement for the legalization of drugs, ecological actions and protests and so on, are included in this orientation. Now, I think it's important that Dugin says all this reminds one of a carnival. That gives you a sense of what he thinks about the projects of postmodern post-liberalism. And it's possible that it's not too far from what contemporary critics in the public sphere refer to playfully as clown world, this carnivalesque character of the leftist postmodern political projects. The collapse of the USSR and the triumph of liberal democracy signified the start of the American century, a phrase that Dugin examines in this chapter. Now, we already talked about the fact that for Dugin, after the victory of liberalism, there was no systematic opposition left, but only, as he puts it here, a chaotic collection of nuisances, mistakes, and noises that opposed the liberal order by inertia. There was no symmetrical enemy, no large-scale subject with an adequate historical self-understanding, a convincing and orderly ideology, serious material and military resources, and a comparable technological, economic, and armed force. At this point, with no opposition, the United States was no longer a superpower, but now a hyperpower. And let me just remind you of the idea from Chapter 5 that powerful states lacked ideologies, and potential alternative ideologies lacked power, so that in effect, U.S. global liberalism at this point was untouchable. So what does it mean under these circumstances, Dugin asks, that the neoconservatives, whom Dugin equates here to liberal universalists, were starting to talk about the American century? What does that mean, the American century, in this context? Well, in the 20th century, America defeated its ideological enemies. And in the 21st century, America would affirm the American model, the American way of life, as a world order obligatory for all. The entire planet must become a world America or world state. And as Dugin writes, this is not simply colonization or a new form of imperialism. It's a program for the total implementation of the one and only ideological system copied from American liberal ideology. An ideology that was now to penetrate into the life of peoples and governments in 1,000 different ways, from technology to mass culture. Another name for global Americanization is democratization, which aimed to transform certain geopolitical enclaves like the Middle East and Central Asia by uprooting inertial national, political, economic, social, religious, and cultural models and replacing them with the operating system of American liberalism. That, for Dugin, is the meaning of the American century. In his words, liberalism must penetrate into the depths of all societies and countries without exception, and the slightest resistance will be broken, as happened in Serbia, Iraq, and Afghanistan. So-called paleoconservatives opposed this vision, but their opposition did not have an effect on the neocons who, at the time that Dugin was writing, set the tone for American politics through their understanding of the ideological meaning of the state of affairs at the start of the 21st century. Neocons see America not as a country, but as an idea that is in principle universalizable. And with the loss of the USSR as an opponent, they sought to begin to implement that idea globally. Dugin acknowledges that in doing so, they acted consistently and understood better than the other players the ideological dimension of contemporary world politics.